And now let us continue inside. We're going to finish the last piece of chapter 19. Vihine. Daf Chafei Amid Beis on the top, page 50, the first word. There's a few more lines for Perikei Tes, and let's complete it. Let's conclude it. Vihine Zagdal Terebbe now. Oid Hashem. You have it, page 50 on the top. Yeah. No, so what's your question? Why is it you're asking that some Jews did not go on Mysterious Nefesh for Kiddush Hashem? The Alter Rebbe himself says, Al Derech HaRoiv, in Perikei Tes, Al Derech HaRoiv, the majority of cases. He acknowledges that there is a minority which did not, would not, did not. And we know this in Jewish history. I mean, there's a reason he says, Al Derech HaRoiv. You know, there's a fascinating insight from the Baditcher that I saw a while ago. The Hilke Baditcher says, the Kedushas Levi, he says, you know, it says, the Chazal say that before Matan Torah, Hashem went around to all of the nations, and he offered them the Torah. Right? The Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, Chazal say in Sifri says in Parshas V'zayis HaBracha, Hashem Sinai Ba Vizarach Miseir Lama Yafiya Mahar Paran. Hashem went to the nations of the world and offered them the Torah. Bnei Yisav, Bnei Yishmael, everybody. And they all said no. When he came to the Jews, the Jewish people said, Nasav and Ishmael. We're ready to accept. But the Tshuva says, is it really possible that there was not one non-Jew who said yes? Everybody said no. Next question. Is it really possible that every Jew said yes? Come on, we know Jews. Has there ever been in history something that all the Jews should say yes? It's impossible. Most Jews said yes, but certainly somebody said no. The Baditcheva says, certainly, some non-Jews said yes, and some Jews said no. And history petered it out. The non-Jews who said yes, their gene, or the sum of their descendants, convert to Judaism. The Jews who said no, some of their descendants leave Judaism. It's a fascinating insight, but it doesn't really address the core issue here, because if the Jew was born from a Jewish mother, or converted halachically, he's a child of Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah. There's a Jewish soul there. There's a Jewish connection. So you're asking a good question. There are a few points that can be said about this, and I'll address it very briefly. Point number one. Just as the Alter Rebbe says, on a daily basis, a Jew can sin and transgress and violate God's will, notwithstanding who he or she is, the Chachmah Shel B'Nefesh, why? They're unaware that it's being tarnished. They're unaware that it's being affected. It's asleep. And nothing is awaking it. Sometimes, this can maybe happen, even when it comes to an issue of Emunah, they do not realize that they're being torn away from their Yiddishkeit. Because Alter Rebbe explained before in chapter 14 that sometimes people think they're sinning, but they're not being torn away from their Yiddishkeit. They're not being torn away from God, so why not? Now, usually when it comes to questions of real Emunah, the illusion doesn't work anymore. The fantasy doesn't work anymore. You know, it's like with addiction. You know, sometimes you tell yourself, I'm not addicted, it's not really so bad, I can always stop. Then there comes a point, you hit rock bottom, there's no turning around. Now you realize you're either in or you die. Either you save yourself or you die. There comes a certain point in the Jewish life where he realizes you're in or you're out. And that's when he says, I'm in. But sometimes a person may not even at that point realize it. That's point number one. Point number two. Let's take parents and children. A human being, a parent, a child has an inherent, innate relationship to a father and a mother. And nothing can change that. It can be eclipsed. It can be covered. There can be some experiences which create, unfortunately, negative emotions, but there's a certain level of a relationship that's very deep. But what happens if a child has a father and mother, but they did not raise the child? The child was raised elsewhere. And then the child meets his father, meets his mother. The relationship is there, but he does not access it when it comes to these people. Why? He doesn't know this is his father. He doesn't know this is his mother. It's not his fault. There is an inherent fuse, an inherent feeling we have towards our father or towards our mother. But if I don't know that this person is my father, I don't know this person is my mother, it won't come out. So the point is that in such an unfortunate situation, we have a concept in halacha called tinek shenishba, a child who was taken into captivity. A Jewish child who was snatched from the Jewish people and raised in a foreign culture, in a foreign society. You're dealing with a whole different condition, a whole different situation. There's no rebellion here. It's a child who doesn't even know to which people he or she belongs to. So the first point I was making is, you may know your father, you may know your mother, you may have at your core the deepest commitment to your parents to the point of giving your life for them. But there comes a point where you don't feel that you're detaching from your parents or you're betraying your parents. That's number one. Number two is, a child who never met his parents, that aspect of the relationship has never been dealt with. It was never exposed. It never came out. It remains there in potentiality, but it was never actualized and materialized because the person never had the ability to feel his father, to feel his mother. And even if he meets them, you can't expect that core is going to come out. He doesn't even know it's his father or his mother. And the same is with the Jew as well. That whole aspect of self has never been cultivated to the point where, when the question is, will you detach from God or not? So very often, the core, even if it's asleep, will immediately come to the fore and the Jew will say emphatically no. But sometimes, that won't happen. You see what happened to the Chachma Shebe Nefesh? The Jew doesn't know this is his father. So that part doesn't come out. There's also a third component. This has to do with choice. The power of choice transcends nature. Naturally, you don't do certain things, but you can choose to do certain things. Your natural inclination may gravitate in a certain direction, but the person may choose to operate in a different direction, opposite direction. The Alter Rebbe is describing here the teva, the nature of the Jewish soul. And yet the person can choose to fight that nature, to go against that nature. V'hine, now zog the Alter Rebbe, oy ravaya. On top of the page, yeah. V'hine oid, I'm sorry, oid ein seif baruch. The light of the endless one, blessed be he, the energy of Hashem, amalubash b'chach, the light, the presence of Hashem, amalubash b'chach moshe b'nefesh, which is enclosed and manifested in the element of chachman, the Jewish soul. The presence of Hashem, which lives, which dwells in the Chachma of the soul, Godol v'otzim koyche kol kach. Its power is so great and powerful. Its koyach, its strength, is so great and powerful. L'gadesh v'litchis ha-sitzachre v'haklippus. To expel and to push away the other side and the shells, the husks, which conceal on God. That they should not be able to affect and touch, even the garments of the Jew, even the garments of the soul. We explained before in chapter 4, every soul has 10 faculties. Chochma bin adas, chesed gura teferes, netzach chod yisoid malchus, 10 modes of expression, 10 modes of experience. Every soul also has 3 garments, 3 levushim, like garments you can take off and put on. They're not part of your essential personality, but they're rather mechanisms of expression, instruments through which you express yourself, thought, words, and action. And these are far easier to change, just like you can change your garments, you can't change your body, unless you go through an intense surgery. So the power of the Eid Ein Sof, which is in the soul, is so intense that it expels the Sitra Achira, that it should not even be able to affect the garments of the soul. Shei Machshav Adibra Maisa Shalomunas Hashem Echad, namely the thoughts and words and deeds which express the Emunah, the faith of the Jew in one God. The Hainu meaning Lamoid Bin Nisoyin Limser Nafshe. The power of Mesiris Nefesh, the power, the presence of Hashem and Chacham Hashem and Nefesh, gives the Jew the ability, the capacity, and the motivation to withstand the test, Limser Nafshe, to sacrifice his life, Afilu Shloi Lasis Rak Eze Maisa Levad Neged Demunas Hashem Echot, even not to do only a Maisa, an action contrary to the faith of one God. Kigoin, for example, if they attempt to force a Jew to prostrate himself, to bow down to idolatry, although he does not believe in it at all in his heart, the person who is forcing him to worship idolatry doesn't want to change his heart. He may even tell him, I don't care what you're feeling, I don't care what you're thinking, but I want externally you should do a technical act of bowing down to Avodah Zarah. So the person may think, the Jew may think to herself or to himself, what's the big deal? I'm not conceding to idolatry. I'm not betraying one God's oneness. I'm not going away from God. What am I doing? It's just a garment. I put on a shirt. I can take off the shirt around 5 seconds later. I put on a pair of socks or a pair of shoes. I can take them right off. On and off, on and off. You can change your shirt every 5 minutes, every minute, every 5 seconds. You can wear hundreds of shirts. It's not you. So what am I going to do? He's going to bow down to Avodah Zarah. It's one maisa, an act which is superficial, which is skin deep, which is a garment. It's external. It's completely alien to the person. Totally does not reflect his or her inner personality, conviction, and identity. And yet, the Jew has Mesiras Nefesh even for this. What does this mean? What does it demonstrate? That the godliness in Chachma Shevenefesh is so deep, it's so powerful, that when it's expressed, it does not allow the Sitra Achira, the shell of unholiness, to touch a Jew even in the most external way. It expels the Sitra Achira from the totality of his life. Even his garments will be saturated with the oneness of God. V'chein, another example, if it's not about deed, it's about a word. Shaloi l'daber toyechas v'shalom alachtas Hashem. He is ready to sacrifice his life, not to speak verbally, God forbid, against the unity of God. Here again, he's not being forced to change his conviction or his emotions. He's not even forced to do anything. He's being told, say words which betray God's oneness. And the Jew will not do that. And will often sacrifice his life not to do it. Af she'ein pevili b'shoven. Even though it's clear that his mouth and his heart are not identical. They're not reflecting each other. It's not that what he's saying is what he's feeling. No. He's just saying it to say it, although he totally does not identify with it. Rak libo yishalom b'munas Hashem. His heart is wholesome with God, faith in God. And yet, he's ready to fight till the end not to say these few words. For the very same reason. Once the Eid Ein Sof is expressed, it doesn't allow the Sitra Achira to affect even the garments of the Jewish soul. Yeah. Why doesn't Alter Rebbe bring an example of thought? It's a great question. What's the answer? It's very simple. You can't force somebody what to think. You cannot force a Jew, tell him, I'm forcing you to think so and so, and if not, I'm going to kill you. How can you prove what he's thinking? When it comes to words and deeds, these are expressed to the outside person. When it comes to thought, what does the Gemara say in Pesachim? Ein adam yedei ma'beliv b'shel chaveri. You never know what another person is thinking. So I can't force anybody to think something. That's where the Alter Rebbe can't give an example of thought. But in the beginning, he says that the Ein Sof is so powerful that it won't allow the clip even to affect machshava, because the point is that, yes, the Jew won't even think kfira when it comes to this moment, when it comes to this point. But of course, it won't be expressed practically in the outside world, because there's no barometer for anybody to see it. Alter Rebbe continues, v'zeh, this commitment and mesiris nefesh, even for the small technical expressions of a relationship with God. You might think, I'm in love with you, I'm in a relationship with you, I'm ready to give everything up for you, I'm ready to give up the most precious things for you, if you ask me to actually give them up. But when you tell me that I should do an external act which will betray you, or just say a few words which will betray you, what's the big deal? It's not a real thing. Come on, you know where my heart is, you know where my soul is, you know where my mind is, you know where my convictions are. And yet sometimes we see there's a relationship that's so intense, it's so real, it's so powerful. You will not even get yourself to say a word that betrays the relationship, even though it's obvious to yourself and even to others that you don't mean it. And you're just saying it because you have to say it. So sometimes there's a relationship where you will betray your beloved, you will say things against them, and you don't really mean them. You don't really mean those words. Or you will do something which betrays them, but you don't really mean it. It's just an action, and you won't repeat the action. But if there's a real deep relationship, as he says here, tremendously intense, tremendously powerful, then you will not allow yourself to separate from this relationship, even for a moment, even externally, even superficially, because this is who you are, and you will not step away from it. You're not making a logical equation. What's the big deal? I'll just say a few words and separate from you, but I'm coming right back. I'll rebound. That's a great observation. Mathematically, it worked. It made sense. But that's not what this relationship is about. This relationship is, I cannot, once I'm exposed to this part of me, I cannot detach from you. I will not detach from you. It's the most important thing to me. It's who I am. And I'm not going to become not I, even for a moment, even externally. I can't. It's almost as though I can't. I cannot say no to you, even with words, even with a superficial action. There's an interesting story, which I'm reminded of. I think we once discussed it. When Alter Rebbe was in prison, the author of Tanya was in prison. So, of course, one of the major accusations was that he is the successor of the Baal Shem Tov, the successor of the Maggid, who was the successor of the Baal Shem Tov, and the whole idea that Hasidus and Hasidism is jeopardizing Judaism and the Jewish movement and is creating chaos in the Jewish world and creating immorality and lack of ethics and ultimately undermining their loyalty to the government, to the Russian Tsar, and all of the other many accusations that were brought to the Tsarist government against the Alter Rebbe, for which he was arrested. And the story is told that they interviewed the Alter Rebbe in prison, and they were investigating him, and they asked him a question, and the question was, are you a follower of the Baal Shem Tov? Do you represent the Baal Shem Tov? And it was very obvious that if the Alter Rebbe would have said no, they would have let him go, and his sentence would have been annulled, and he would be a free man. And the Alter Rebbe said yes. And he had to remain in prison, had to go through more investigations and much suffering until he was finally set free on Yutus Kislev. And the Alter Rebbe later said, I could have said no and they would have set me free, and my problems would have been over. Aber ich hab sich nicht gekannt abreißen von der Baal Shem Tov afilu far ein rega afilu bedibur. I could not tear myself away, detached from the Baal Shem Tov, even for a moment, even verbally. And it's not that he would mean it. And it's not even for Jews. It's for non-Jews who knew about the Baal Shem Tov. Very, very little, trust me. Who the Baal Shem Tov was, what the Baal Shem Tov is, as much as they knew about the Alter Rebbe. Certainly till they got to know him a little more intimately after the whole trial, until they set him free and they were astonished, astounded by his greatness and his depth and his holiness and so forth. So what's the big deal? You're sitting in a Tsarist prison, and a few Gentiles, maybe scholars, some professors, some high government officials, are asking you a question. But he couldn't. He couldn't get himself to say that he's disconnected from the Baal Shem Tov. Notwithstanding the fact that he could have said himself, if I really want to help the Baal Shem Tov, let me go free, so I'll be able to spread the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov. Logically, the other side makes much more sense. By saying that you're disconnected to the Baal Shem Tov, you'll actually be able to help and continue propagate the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov. These are all very nice logical explanations and equations. It doesn't have to do with that. He's one with the Baal Shem Tov, and he can't get himself to say, I'm not. And this commitment and mysterious nefesh, even on the small details and the external details, nikra dechilu anichlo berichimu. This is the type of awe which is encompassed within love. And here he answers the fourth question. I began the shiur tonight that in Perikit Ches Dal Tereba raised four questions. What's the source of the love? What's the theme of the love? How is it transferred generationally? And the next question is, how does it encompass awe as well? Love must have voices. Here we see the yira that's part of the ava. Shehi, the love is ava, tiv is the natural love. Shebenefesh elikis, which exists in the divine soul, shebeklolis Yisrael, which exists in all of the Jewish people. In the general collective entity of the Jewish people, there is a nefesh elikis, which exists in all of Klal Yisrael, beklolis Yisrael, in all of Klal Yisrael, in the collective identity of the Jewish people. There's a divine soul, which, as he says later in chapter 32, it's really one soul, which connects us all together. One nefesh elikis. Her desire and will naturally is to connect, to cleave to her root and to her source. This is the love of the divine soul in every Jew, which naturally wants to cleave to its own source. What is its source? Eirin Seif Baruch Hu, the light and the presence of Hashem. Shemipneyav is as a result of this love. Virats, and then this desire to completely be one with Hashem. He, the divine soul, Yirei Yom Efachedes. Betiva is petrified, is scared, naturally, min Goya, to touch. Afilu b'kzei Tumas Avodah Zarah Chas V'Shalom, even the edge of the impurity of Avodah Zarah, of idolatry, heaven forbid. Shehi neged emunas Hashem echad. Because she, Avodah Zarah, is contrary to the emunah, the faith in one God. Afilu b'levusha chitzoinim, the sphere is. She does not want to touch the edge of the impurity of Avodah Zarah, contrary to the emunah in one God. Afilu b'levusha chitzoinim, even in her external garments. Even the external garments of Avodah Zarah, Shem Dibur or Maisa, were a word or a deed which are contrary to Emunah B'li Emunah B'Levka, even without any faith in the heart. So you might think, since there's no Emunah B'Lev, why will you not just compromise your priorities? But this is the Dechilu Anichol Berechimu. This is the awe which is encompassed within the love, which it causes the Jew to be scared, that he wants to stay away from Avodah Zarah, not only in an intimate way, but even from touching the edge of it. Say, Tumas Avodah Zarah, Chas V'Shalom. Practically speaking, he just has to say a word or act, do a superficial act without any inner emotional commitment of Avodah Zarah. And yet, he doesn't even want to get close to the edge, doesn't want to get close to the most external garment. He will not compromise his relationship with Hashem, even in the most superficial, skin-deep way. He will remain loyal to his God. So this Ava encompasses also a Yira. Because love on its own, as we said, is insufficient for Avodas Hashem. Avodas Hashem requires Ava together with Yira. Must have both. Ava without Yira is missing something very fundamental, just as Yira without Ava is missing something very fundamental. As Dr. Rebbe will explain later in chapter 40, Ava and Yira are the wings of the soul. He said it already in chapter 16, Tazayin, but it'll be explained at length in Perek Mem. They are the wings of the bird which allow the bird to soar. And one wing without the other will not do the job. You need to have two wings, and it's the balance which allows the bird to fly. It's the balance between Ava and Yira, and the tension between Ava and Yira. How does this love include Yira as well? So the Alter Rebbe says, Ava and Yira are two opposite notions. One is closeness, and one represents distance. One, I feel so close to you, and one, I feel so far from you. In one, I love you, and in the other, I respect you. In one, I try to go out of my identity and congeal, become one with your identity. And in one, I acknowledge the distance between my identity and your identity. As somebody once said, Maida ani lefanecha, the first thing I am maida that ani is not lefanecha. There is me, there's I, and there's lefanecha. And that's important, it's healthy, it's needed, it's necessary. Ava is tremendous. Love, love, love. But you need Yira. Now, usually they represent two opposite notions. Besides in this case, and this is what Alter Rebbe is explaining, it seems, when the Ava is coming from the very core, when the Ava is not just, I like something, I appreciate it, and therefore I like it. I develop a liking. That's an emotion that's born from awareness, from cognition. The Ava and Yira are two separate things, two separate experiences. When the Ava is coming from the very essence of the I, that is Oirein Seif Baruch Hu in the Nefesh Elikis, in Chachma Sheba Nefesh. And as a result of that, the soul wants to become one with its source, with its essence, with its Shoresh, which it experiences Oirein Seif Baruch Hu. This is a love that comes from the very, very I. The I wants to be one with the I. The true I of the soul is Bittul. The true I of the soul is Ein Sof. The true I of the soul, Chachma Sheba Nefesh, is the place where the I is suspended and is one with God. And that creates this powerful love, this powerful Ava. An equally vital component of this Ava is that it cannot be not I. And it's allergic, and it's sensitive, and it's scared, and it will never want to touch anything which betrays that very I. In other words, when Ava and Yira are being operated on more conscious levels, love is one experience and awe is an opposite experience. But when they're stemming from the very essence, when the Ava is born from the very essence of how the I experiences itself in its deepest place, then the Yira is not a separate emotion from the Ava, but it's the Chilu HaNichlul B'Rechimu. The Yira is part and parcel of the Ava. And it expresses itself practically in the fact that as a result of the Jew wanting to be one with Hashem and wanting to cleave to its own source, to its own true identity, to its own true core. As a result of that, it's also scared of even touching that which is contrary to it, that which will defy its very life, that which will negate its very life, that which will tear it away from its very essence, from its very core, from its very identity, from the truth of God. The here and now is a natural byproduct born from the Ava. My eye is connected to something, and it loathes, it's allergic, it's repulsed by the notion of betraying it, even touching anything that will betray it. Such a type of love encompasses also you. Have a good night.
Rabbi Jacobson delivers this weekly class on the Tanya at Heichal Menachem in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn, New York. To order additional tapes or albums, please call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076.